Hi everyone, big news. We've been nominated for a British Podcast Award in the lifestyle category. So thank you so much for all your support so far. And we're really proud of ourselves because we have been going for just 1 year. We're absolutely chuffed, but there's one more thing. There is a Listener's Choice Awards and it's now open. And you get to vote for the podcast you love listening to. And if you can vote for us, we'd really, really appreciate it. So if you go to www.britishpodcastawards.com/voting and vote for This Is Powerful with Paul Scolfo. It's open till the 8th of September. Your voting means a lot to us. Thank you for your support. We're really excited to be in the running for this.
Manifestation, I think, starts at the beginning.
Starts with a thought.
It starts with a thought. Well, everything I've ever asked for was standing there. Everything I'd ever dreamed of, even on the lingerie pages, was there. It was just there. And then it was about how I'm going to get that.
Yeah.
Just because manifesting something's okay. You want to be a movie star, Tamer? I think you deserve that. You've earned it. Go on then. How are you going to sustain it? How are you going to deal with the fame? How are you going to deal with the rejection? Because you can't wear that rejection jacket well, mate. I know you don't wear that rejection jacket, but you're going to get rejected time and time again. How are you going to wear that jacket? So that's when the beauty comes in. That's when the journey starts.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to This Is Powerful with me, Paul Scolfo. In this podcast, I speak to some incredible people about mindset, mental health, addiction, and recovery. And I share my own journey throughout these conversations. So whether you're on your own path of self-discovery, recovery, or transformation, inspired by human stories of mental resilience, or supporting someone who is struggling with addiction, make sure you follow and subscribe to This Is Powerful. There'll be a new episode every Thursday. In these episodes, we will be talking about drug and alcohol misuse, suicide, sexual abuse, and some other heavy topics. So please take care when listening. Thank you for joining us this week as we welcome a powerhouse of a guest, Tamer Hassan. The actor from Southeast London, best known for his role opposite Danny Dyer in The Football Factory, Tam has also appeared in Layer Cake, Batman Begins, The Business, which is my favourite movie, and many, many more. Now in sobriety, Tamer talks about his life journey through boxing, films, his strong entrepreneurial streak, and his renewed outlook on life. On a personal note, I've known Tamer for many years, and I've always looked up to his career in acting. But in this conversation, we get a little bit more intimate, and I've known him closer and closer as time goes on. Tam, thanks so much for being here, mate. I really appreciate your time. I know you're in sobriety now, which is unbelievable, and congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
We'll come back to that because it's important. But I'd love to know from the beginning, what was it like to be brought up in New Cross in the 70s, mate?
Yeah, it was magical, to tell you the truth. It was tough. There wasn't a lot of us. There was, you know, the West Indians. I think the Indians and the Pakistanis moved up north. My mum was a bit of a hippie chick. She was beehive, miniskirt. She was a bit rebellious, my mum. So she didn't want to go to North London. And then she brought me and my brother to South London. And there weren't a lot of sort of Cypriots in South London. In London, predominantly, I think Kilburn was the Irish. And then there was a West Indians that were here. Jamaicans, some Africans, and us, and we was a real minority. So it was difficult in one sense because of the racism. And I looked at racism then as something fucking horrible, and it just really depressed me. And then I got to the age of 12, I think. My mum took me to Cyprus, and I thought, I'll be accepted here. Like, you know, I'm not going to get called the Paki word and the N word and all the words that... Well, not accepted now, but they were all the spiteful words that were said to us growing up. And I went to, I went to Cyprus and went to the village. I thought, yeah, I'm going to be with my people and I'm not going to get abused. They called me an English bastard and beat me up. So,
you're joking.
I swear to God, yeah. So I quickly learned that it's not really racism. It's just kids are spiteful, aren't they?
Yeah.
But just growing up in the 70s was magical, because the great thing about being poor, and we was very poor, we didn't have much. My mum worked a job. My dad worked 3 jobs and she was a seamstress. But the beautiful thing about poor people, you can leave your door open. And poor people help each other, don't they? They seem to pull each other through.
There's a camaraderie.
A camaraderie and a trust. And I always remember Mum used to say, take this over to Thea. There was a Greek Cypriot. I mean, I don't like saying Greek Cypriot, but another Cypriot family just lived 2 doors up from us. Take us, you need some sugar. Make sure you get half a loaf of bread before you come back. So it was all of that sort of beautiful thing. And people, I hear people all the time saying, oh, I lived in the flats and it was horrible. And well, evidently you didn't, because it was the most magical time.
I absolutely
agree. It was beautiful, wasn't it? It was just a magical time. Community, neighbours, solidarity. And listen, you always had the bad ones. You know, you always had the Asbos, what they call them now, the bad kids that were selling drugs on the corner and bullying people. But then they quickly were eradicated from our fathers and our uncles and our older brothers. Do you see what I'm saying? So as kids growing up, you'd think, you'd know that you better be careful, because they're going to come and get you.
Well, there was a lot of morals there, a lot of moral fibre.
The moral standpoint was amazing.
Trust and honesty. Yeah. I'd love to jump into boxing, because you boxed early as well, right?
I started early. Mum, I was a little short, chubby. I won't say fat when I was a kid. Pure white I was. I was as white as a sheet. It was the most bizarre mix ever.
Really?
I had this hair, right? I had this head of hair. And the typical Turk or Mediterranean would be sort of hairy and, you know, dark-skinned. And, yeah, we all had hair as kids, but mine was... I mean, the barber used to say, oh, he's going to blunt my scissors. It was that thick. Every time I cut your hair, son, he'd go, I've got to sharpen my scissors. So and I've still got it, thank God, it's still there. But growing up then, I was short and I was white and I was, you know, a little bit of an oddball and a bit awkward. And I used to get bullied and beat up a lot, like really beat up a lot. And my mum tried to put me into judo. Didn't like it, blah, blah, blah. And then a friend of ours in New Cross, All Saints Church, Ginger May. If I can tell you, Ginger May was Mickey out of Rocky, I'm not lying. Roll up out of his mouth, fit as you like. He had 3 sons that were pro boxers. He used to coach us in the church hall. We didn't have a ring or nothing. We just had benches and stuff. And he put a lot of discipline into us. And he fathered me in a way. And God rest his soul, I miss him dearly. He's been gone a long time, but he's that man that'd have a roll up out of his mouth. He'd have us all on, you know, those little benches.
That's good,
all sitting on there, lifting them up, doing sit-ups, going, like, if I can do it, you can do it. And he was just, but he was a freak of nature, do you know what I mean? But just an old school, solid Englishman, do you know what I mean? And he was a beautiful man and loved all of us. There was no drink involved, and we get to that. Everything was discipline, and he had us. Great coach. And that's what kind of got me into boxing. It was, you know, as you're growing up, first and foremost, the girls love a boxer, didn't they? When we was growing up, oh, he's a boxer. And then all of a sudden you start batting, you know, and now they just throw him in the ring. I remember I failed my medical. Do you remember years ago? I used to have I failed it the first year, and then I'd do another year, and I was like,
How did you fail that?
I don't know what it was. It was a technicality on lungs or something, or fitness. There was something there that I failed it. And he said, I'll try and fast track it. But that was the discipline.
Yeah.
And people don't get in that. Everyone's just getting thrown in. There's so many combat sports out there. It doesn't matter. If you ain't doing that, you're doing that.
Yeah.
But then it was just boxing. I mean, karate and all that was with Bruce Lee on the telly, you know. Yeah. But for us, it was boxing.
And it was good as well, wasn't it? Because they used to have boxing in schools. I started in Dagenham Boxing Club.
Yeah.
And then went to Howard Wood. And even in our school, they said, do you want to come and put a display on?
Yeah, we said, go and do sparring sessions at different, you know, the Lodge and Fitzroy Lodge and Fisher and all these little things that were local. Used to go around and start sparring. I remember we used to go down to the old Thomas Rebecca Saturday mornings where the old pros, you remember the Thomas Rebecca on the Elkhead Road? And I mean, everyone from our league, they'd all Cooper, they'd all train there. And we used to go down there on Saturday mornings, and what a fucking treat that was. It was just magical to go down there. I hated it because Ginger used to make us spar heavy, because I was a middleweight, I was very tall and wiry, and he used to make us spar heavyweights for power, and then he used to make us spar lightweights for speed, and you just couldn't get them. It was just, I just hated that part of it, yeah. Because God, heavyweights hurt, don't they? I mean, they don't hit you much, but if they hit you once or twice, you fucking know about it. And then the little ones, you just can't get to them. They're just whippets just stinging you. They're just like little stings, isn't they? You're just, okay, oh, you know, you can't get around. But I know what the training, I hated it at the time, but I understand what the ethos around it was then.
Oh, I loved it.
And yeah, it was great. And it was a lovely time. And then, you know, people started quickly leaving me alone after that. Yeah. You know, and especially when you get your first bout. I remember my first bout, I was terrified. I don't even remember much of it to this day. It was at the Millwall Social Club, and there was another. He'd had two fights more than me, and you know, you remember your bat didn't turn up. You try and get one, and
usually the big growler in the corner. Unfortunately,
you want to fight him. I go, and then in my heart and soul, say, I don't, please don't. But then you got your mates with you, and your girlfriend's in the audience. Everyone's there. You mean just go out there and have a slugfest? But I remember the first one. I don't remember it. I said to Ginger, I said, God, he put me on my knee twice, didn't he? He went, he didn't, mate. He didn't put... And in my head, it's bizarre. He must have hit me so many times, right? And he was a good fighter. You know, he had potential and he had pedigree and he was ready to go. And I think it was his third fight. And I remember it really hurt. And in my head, to this day, I'll tell you, I went down for a count on my knee. I didn't. He said, you didn't. First round, I smacked you about a little bit. Second round, you come out and stopped him. Yeah. It's so bizarre. I don't remember any of it.
It's a weird process.
It was such a weird process. I just went out and I think I went into survival mode and just started swinging and got through it. And we stopped the fight. And then that was it. And I still said, he goes, you didn't get a count.
It's so funny perception.
Weird how your brain works when you're getting hit with fear and adrenaline. And
my dad took me to his cousin's club, Lions Club, when I was 12. And he said, do you want to have a go? I went, yeah, I'll have a go. And I watched all the guys ramp up and do all the bands. And I was thinking, wow. I was really young, 12, by the way. I was like, wow, this is amazing. It's really romantic. He said, no, jump to the ring. All I can remember is getting out crying. I had no idea what happened. All I've ever seen is like boxing movies and The Champ. And I thought, yeah, I'll have a go. This guy just flew around. Mate, and I was thinking, I don't even know where they're coming from.
Yeah, it's a beautiful sport, isn't it?
And after that, though, I was so embarrassed. Because my dad was quite a tough guy, I was so embarrassed. I was like, I have to learn how to box, and that's when I started at Dagenham and the other clubs. And I remember my first fight lasted about 30 seconds. Fortunately for me, I stopped the kid, but I was so nervous.
So happy
I had it in my head that my right was slow, so I only used my left. My trainer, my boy, was like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I don't know."
It's bizarre. Yeah. When you're in there, you just take direction, don't you?
Yeah.
I remember a fight. My trainer, Ginger May, he went, start using your right. I completely forgot about this and just started throwing rights. Just kept throwing, come back down and said, what are you doing? I said, well, you said throw the right. He said, I didn't mean just throw the right. I said, start throwing the right. Oh, okay, crack, get back in there. And then I think in my head, I was just still throwing that right. Do you know, because we're only young, aren't we? We're trying to take, and we're surviving more than it, because you've got embarrassment, shame, your mates are there, you're trying to take, you're trying to look cool, you've got all the gear on, so all those things mixed into, I throw that all in the bowl as a kid or an early teenager, you just don't know what's going to happen. And that's where I think the word novice comes from. Do you know, he's a
that's
novice
probably a
yeah
point.
That whole mixture, it really just sits within novice, doesn't it?
Yeah,
he's a novice, be careful, because you don't know what's coming. And hence, after I got better and I started understanding pugilism and the sport and the art of it, when somebody said, listen, there's a kid sitting over there, if my bat didn't turn up, and that started happening quite a lot as I started progressing. He's a novice, do you want to have a go? I go, no. Nah, because if you see, it's the old Rocky story, isn't it? Rocky's first fight, he was a novice.
Yeah.
But novices have a different mentality and a drive. And, you know, and then he goes and wins. I'm not fighting a novice because I've lost that. I've started becoming disciplined in the sport and I understand it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I took a fight, which I should never have took, and I don't know how I won it. I think he got disqualified, and then we both got disqualified. I think his name was Tony Cook, I can't remember, but he was like Mike Tyson. And I was like, listen, it was early, and I went, I'm not, and it was at, it was at the Yorkshire Grey. And a couple of friends of mine that have been in the game for quite a long time, they went, just take the fight, you'll be all right. And they're going, just, you know, you'll be fine, you'll be fine. He's a swinger. He's a, oh my God, I can't tell you what. He hit me, my jaw went that way, and my body started walking that way. And it was at that moment, you know, at that moment, he knew he was done. And it went that way, and my body started walking that way. And I thought, what am I going to do here? And it went, I went into survival mode. And by the grace of God, I caught him with a peach. He went through the ropes. He went against the ropes, and I've gone at him. And it turned into a bit of a, and then he's gone through the ropes. And he's so angry, he was fuming. He come out and he took his gloves off to do me. And the referee stopped it. And I've gone into, don't worry about all that. I'll see you in the car park after, right? I've gone into that. It literally went into a bar brawl,
yeah.
Right? And it's all coming back to me. I went into a bar brawl and he took his gloves off and he's come to go at me. He's corner stopped me. And I went, listen, don't worry about all that. I'm trying to get mine off. And he's trying to get his off. I said, I'll see you in the car park after, right? So it got to that and the referee went, you disqualified. I've got it back later. Because we put a case towards the board and went, but hang on, listen, I did my bit. He come out and he's provoked it first. So I did get the win. It wasn't an official win. It was a disqualification. Yeah. But in the end, I got the win. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then after, he quickly realised what he was dealing with. And I was still on him. I was in his dressing room, just young and stupid. I'll wait for you outside. You're going to brat out. And he was like, look, just relax. He was on my manor. He was on my manor.
And then. he was then like, I know I fucked up.
And then he's gone rematch. I've gone, have any. No, that was it. I remember he went, I'll have a, when we got disqualified, he went, I'll have a rematch. I said, fuck, I can rematch. I'll see you in the car park, okay? After we do it now. So it kind of got to that thing and that was one that sits in my head quite prominently. Like,
how did you move from boxing to acting?
I didn't go from boxing to acting. I went from boxing to entrepreneurial stuff. My mum knew at a very young age, Paul, that I was very defiant. I was anti-school, I was very dyslexic as a kid. I couldn't read my own name till I was about 7 or 8. I remember they used to put like a sticker on my drawer and stuff. But she knew at a very young age I was very defiant, and she thought, this kid ain't ever gonna get a job. He ain't gonna be told what to do. So from the age of 12, I was working, I was stacking shelves in Londis at 12 years old, raising my sister, bringing some money into the house. I remember I used to get 12 quid a week. I think a kebab was like 40p or something.
Yeah, it weren't a lot of them, was it?
No, and I used to give all the money to my mum so she could get my sister's uniform and stuff. And then at the end of the week, I'd keep half of it and I'd take my girlfriend and have a kebab. And so I never smoked, I know, but it was a treat. A treat, and I used to give it back to her. But she knew very, very young. So what she did, she was a seamstress and she used to work for Selfridges. So she'd say she'd have to make 100 dresses, there'd be 20 left over, they'd let her buy them for next to nothing. They used to have, I think, $69.99 price tags on them. So she bought me a market stall and we started market trades.
Where was the market stall?
East Lane. We had a site at East Lane, Bromley, wherever we could pitch up. My mum had a Volkswagen Beetle, so we put a roof rack on it, put the back seats down, put all the dresses there, the tarpaulin and the stall was on the top. We used to strap it up with all the clips and I used to sit in front and my mum used to take me. They dropped me off. I used to set it all up and she used to go. I mean, we didn't make a lot of money. I'd spend more money on hot dogs and tea than what we made profit-wise. But I think that was my schooling. That was that was where I started off. We actually had a market stall in Nine Elms Lane and we got it given for free and we walked away from it. And it's one of the biggest markets now. I mean, them pitches now, best-selling for half a million quid.
My granddad had, I think, 20 pitches in Roman Road, Rathbone Street,
I did Roman Road once. We used to, we used to sneak in, and if people didn't turn up, we used to queue. And we used to be in the queue, and nine times out of ten, you won't get Roman Road.
Because used to be a good market. Oh,
the best market, Roman Road, was brilliant.
Yeah.
But you used to get in, and then there was Bromley, and then we used to kind of, because it's now, they got the boot sales, didn't they? So, and that came after. But we used to go and queue, and sometimes we wouldn't get, I'd be all right, upset. But that started my schooling off to get into business, and my mum always wanted to be a business owner.
Yeah.
Do business. I mean, when I left school, I got a scholarship from Edmund Waller. I got a scholarship and went to Haberdashers, which was unheard of for a kid from where I come from to get into that school. And it opened the doors for my sister, my little brother, to go into it. But I loved school, and I was a smart kid. You know, I never wanted to. Probably because the school down the road was a girls' school, and it was so I didn't want to bunk school.
Sadly positioned to
it was horribly positioned. We could see the girls' school and then playing in the playground from where we was, and I'd always sort of at lunchtime knew that there was girls around and stuff. So that was probably why I didn't. But I enjoyed school. I enjoyed dressing up. I used to have even with the clothes, I'd get a double-breasted jacket, blue one. And I put gold buttons on it, and I put my badge on it. And you know, things like, because my mum, and I remember my mum made me a suit when I was about 7 or 8, and I used to wear it to the park thinking I'm the dogs, you know what I mean? Sit there like that on the park bench with my mum, holding my little radio, swanning around with my little radio, pulling the aero up and down, going, look what I've got, listening to the news. Like, I couldn't work out where and to find the music on, but just strolling around. My mum used to go, you were a genius, you were brilliant. Because my dad was an exhibition carpenter, so we was lucky. He used to get all the toys if he did an exhibition for toys and stuff. But going back to the business side of it, that's where I started. I finished that, and I was a painting decorator for a little while. But everything I've done, Paul, I've always wanted to be the owner. Yeah. It's never been enough for me being a worker bee. Never ever. It was. I don't know whether it was in my DNA. My mum was very much like that. I never wanted what you got. Like, I remember seeing you in magazines thinking, God, I'd love to be him. Do you know what I mean? On the front cover of a magazine. Never wanted to take your place, but just be inspired by people. I wasn't, because you do get a lot of, and I see it now, when people start talking about they want to do what you do and they want your job, and my mates, I'll get to that, my friends that I had broke my heart, and I got told something by somebody quite up there, and I'll get to that. But I never wanted to be working for. I don't mind being a number two, because a number two is the best gig in the world. You know, your ideas, let them believe they're great ideas, laugh at their silly jokes, and then you've got no responsibility.
Yeah,
do you see what I'm saying? So I'm okay being a number two, but as long as I've got my platoon behind me, do you see what I'm saying?
But that's a really important thing you just said, because it's a mindset, right?
Yeah, people like me and you that don't want what's theirs. Don't want what's theirs, but don't want to take it off of them.
Yeah.
We are inspired by them. They're peers to us. How did you get that? What do you have to do to get that? And everybody talks about over the last 20 years, two decades, people talk about manifestation and meditation. Or we were subconsciously manifesting stuff, subconsciously not knowing. Mm-hmm. Because I remember with the Freeman's catalogues and things. Like, I mean, I used to go straight to the women's lingerie section first. Did you see the laugh? That laugh says it all. He's always wanted to say that for when I said it for him. Straight to the lingerie section.
I keep my finger on the motorbike just in case, just to go back.
Exactly. But after you've gone through that, you've had a look. Once you're bored of that, I used to snitch. It's so true. We're only young, ain't we? I used to like bikes. And do you remember the mate Rally?
Yes.
The Rally bikes. There was this white Rally bike. It was a racer. And I used to sit and look at it every single day, wishing I had it. And I think my mum won it somewhere, or so it happened somehow. I didn't have it for long. That was really bizarre. I got it. I come in, it was in the hallway. and that's yours. I think my mum worked or said she's going to pay £2 or 20 pence a month or something happened.
Yeah.
She got it for me or she won, and it was the exact fucking one. It was white. It had the handlebars. It had the red rally down the side. It even had the water holder. I mean, it had the gears,
nice.
The click down gear. It had everything. And then I had it. I remember having it for, I don't know, a couple of weeks, and I fell off of it, and it shattered the bit that grips the chain.
Yeah,
it shattered that, and it had to go back to be repaired, and I never got it back. I think my mum boxed it up and sent it back, and she must have said it was broke when we got it or something, and then she stopped paying for it, and I never got it back. And I was gutted, and I'll never forget it. But thinking back on it, I had it. And then I was painting, decorating, and they had these houses, apartments that were on water. And it was the first time they called the Lakes in Bermondsey. And it was like, wow, these apartments are built in water. And I used to decorate them. I used to walk past them every day because I always had fast cars and real estate on my wall. I never had, apart from Madonna, who I was obsessed with, right? And for everyone else, I wasn't interested in pop and culture and all that. It was always living, how I'm going to live and what I'm going to drive.
Mm.
And I used to walk past these places and I got one. And then I manifested my wife and it took me 2 years to get her, but I got her. And I sit in
Wait,
out
hang
this...
on a minute. How did you do that? Because manifestation, like you said, is a word that's been battered around for the last 10 years in LA and over here. How did you do that? What do you mean by that?
Subconsciously, one is the belief system.
Yeah.
Two is working it out. Because I always think outside the box, even now. I'm not a blueprint guy. I look at the blueprint and think, how can I change it?
Which is massive.
Even with manifesting, I see my wife when I was 18. I was in Magaluf, 19, and I see her. I just went bandy. Everything I could ever want. Cute little nose, cute little face. Bunda, if we can call it. She had a nice booty, but she was chubby and cute and she had just everything, a blonde, and everything about her was just magical for me. And fast forward, you know, when we got together, she said the same thing. You walk through the door and I was like, oh, fuck, you know, and I've got a boyfriend. And so I started quickly trying to work out how I'm going to get this woman. And then I was edging ever closer because she had a boyfriend at the time. And then I messed it up. Something happened, I messed it up. And she went, you're going to break my heart. I can't be with you. And I thought, yeah, that's what you think, right? But she split up with her boyfriend at the time in Spain. She was working there. And then I thought, I ain't going home, I'm staying here. I absolutely terrorized everyone in that vicinity. Like that bad.
Why do I believe you?
No, just, and it's quite funny. Just that, like, listen, she's with me now. No problem, Tom. Listen, she's with me now. No, what, you going out of her? Yeah, we're dating. She come up to me. She went, oh, you, come here. I went, yeah, like a little puppy. She went, are you going around telling everyone I'm with you? I went, no, what are you talking about?
Did you?
Yeah. What are you talking about? Why would I do things like that? You're not with me, are you? She went, oh, just people going, I'm with you. I went, nah, it's absolute. No, don't listen to that, babe. Do you want a drink? Do you know what I mean? That thing.
Yeah.
Straight on them again. Ooh, fucking said something. No, no, no. On them. Just terrified all of them. Anyway, it didn't work. That didn't work. So I come back home and I thought, I can't get her out of my head. And she's back living with her boyfriend. 2 years I chased her, sat outside. I mean, it was romantic then because we didn't have the phones and you know, the FaceTimes and all of that stuff. So we had phones, but it wasn't. It was just hello. It was nothing on them. And I used to try and work out what train station she was at. And I was way out. I knew she lived in Bermondsey, but I just didn't know where. And then I got her. I finally got her. I found her. Hey, babe. How you doing? Oh, hello, dad. Boom. How are you getting on? Yeah. Do you want to go for dinner? So I was dating her.
Yeah.
While she was having a bad time. And then I finally got it, got to where I wanted it to be. And she went, oh, I can't, I won't see you and I won't see him. I'm not that person. And I had a girlfriend at the time as well. So I went, yeah, I'm single. One of them ones. But she was already kind of done anyway. Yeah. It was over. But I just hadn't ended it because it was a long-term relationship. I didn't know how. I'm a bit of a coward when it comes to things. Like, I don't like hurting people. So I didn't know how to do it.
Exiting the building is not always easy.
It's not good. It's not a difficult. And she was a good woman. She was a good girl, wasn't she? Didn't do nothing wrong. And she said, I've got a problem. She, you know, he wants to go back to Spain because he lived there. And she went, I can't get him a ticket. just give me 2 minutes. I put the phone down. I said, tell him to go to the airport. The ticket's waiting for him.
Beautiful.
And that was it. And that was Beautiful. It. And then I got her, and then here we are now. And that was my manifestation, plus factoring in. Because the manifestation, I think, starts at the beginning.
Yeah.
That's your first bit.
Starts with the thought.
It starts with a thought. Yeah. Where I was like, wow. But I'd already manifested this bit. All my everything I've ever asked for was standing there. Mm. Everything I'd ever dreamed of, even on the lingerie pages, was there. It was just there. And I thought, I can't let this go. And I believe now that I was with her in a past life. I swear to God. And I got her in this room. It's quite funny. And I said, I'm getting you in the next one. She goes, you fucking ain't. I'm done. I've done. You ain't getting me in the next one. So we have that bit of banter. But that, I think the first manifestation thought was prior to me seeing her. Mm. So the manifestation had gifted me. And then it was about how I'm going to get that.
Yeah.
Just because manifesting something's okay. I'll manifest that. But you could, it's like my old man said, you got these big multi-million pound houses. They're easy to get, you know, son. It's how you keep them. Do you see what I'm saying? It's
Smart
how you
words
keep
to say
them.
To
you know, it's
it,
how
yeah.
you keep them. So you can manifest that, mate. You can go in, put a deposit down, and get this house. But how are you going to keep it?
Mm.
Are you going to pay them big bills? Are you going to pay that mortgage? How are you going to pay for the things that go? What's the maintenance? And you've kind of think about it. So your manifestation part is the easy part. That's the way I see it. Okay, you have that. If you're a good person in your heart and your soul and you do a lot for others, don't ever do it for others to get repaid, because if you give to receive, you're always going to get heartbroken.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it does come. You do good and it comes. But, okay, there you go, mate. You want to be a movie star, Tamer? I think you deserve that. You've earned it. Go on in. How are you going to sustain it?
Mm.
How are you going to deal with the fame? How are you going to deal with the rejection? Because you can't wear that rejection jacket. Well, mate, I know you don't wear that rejection jacket, but you're going to get rejected time and time again. How are you going to wear that jacket? So that's when the beauty comes in. That's when the journey starts.
Mm.
You know, the trials, the tribulation, that's where the journey starts. And that's what I love about manifestation, is you can get it. It's the journey after.
It's so
that's
fucking
the exciting bit.
Beautiful what you just said, because yeah. I always used to say, my dad always used to say, it's so, you know, it's all right getting in the door. And when I started out, everything I've done, I've had to do myself, right? I've had no fucking too. Help at all. Same. And I say to my dad, he's like, you're all right, you just train for 10 minutes. You're all right, you'll get in good shape. And I'm like, no, Dad, you don't even warm up for 10 minutes. Yeah. And I understand why he said it now. But I used to have a little bit of a beef with him for a period of time, because I'm like, it's not true. You can get through a door, but how do you stay in the fucking room? What happens when you're in the room? That's the bit you forgot to tell me.
But you're going to be saying that to your children. Because I said that to my kids. And I say it to everyone I want to help. Tommy, can you get me in a film? I'll get you through the door if I think you've got the chops to get through. And my son, I spent hundreds of thousands getting him to be a pro. He had talent. And we finally, Harry Redknapp, God bless him, see something in my son. And he gave him a pro at 16 at Portsmouth. And we'd gone down there, we'd signed the contract. Oh, Dad, I've made it. Made what? What have you made?
Mm-hmm.
I made it, I'm a pro. Really? And then I gave him a speech about that stadium being a gladiatorial arena. You don't perform week in and week out. As quick as they made you, they will destroy you with no remorse, with pure evil. The work starts now, son. Now. I'll open the door for you, mate. You got to do the work. And then he quickly got it. Don't be the first one off the training field. Stay there. Because it's proven. Frank Lampard, Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, all these great players, do another 8 hours after.
Yeah.
They don't go. They'll have a bit of dinner, maybe have a sleep, and then go back out. Because the beautiful thing about the sport of football, and I've owned football clubs, and I know football. I've never been great myself. I was okay. But my son was special.
Mm.
The good thing about football, the more you play, the better you get. It's as simple as that. If you've got the basics, the more you play, the better you get. Same as boxing. You've got some chops. I mean, some people just can't fight and it's just it. But if you've got something about you, the more you do it, the better you get. And it's no different to football. And that's why these kids get the money they get. I know it's extortionate, but whatever it is, they've earned it.
Yeah.
You know, people think Mike Tyson woke up and was Mike Tyson. No, he wasn't, mate.
Mm.
he had to train day and night and feel the pain and go without and customize or see something in him, and he tore him to pieces. Mm. He had to go to hell and back to get to where he is. Yes, he has a genetic. Yes, he's a force of nature. But that ain't enough.
That is not. Funny, you know, I've not thought about it, like, but what you said, I'm like, how can I do this? I'm really dyslexic.
Yeah.
I didn't have social skills.
But we're talented. Dyslexia,
I knew how to have a laugh.
Dyslexia is a gift now.
It is now, yeah. It now
was,
I know it is.
It was, they used it as a deterrent or a disadvantage, sorry, not a deterrent, for us, and is dyslexic.
MI5 or MI6 has increased their employment of dyslexics by 300% because they realise pattern recognition, seeing outside, thinking outside of the box. I struggled with my dyslexia in film, and it gave me massive fears, right, to do scripts and stuff in the beginning. How did you come over that? Because you've done some amazing movies, Tamara, incredible parts, seriously, and it's been incredible around the world. And I've watched you. One of my favourite movies is The Business.
Sure.
I can watch it all the time.
Sure.
And I know that was a while ago, but you've been in some epic movies and worked with serious actors, including yourself. How did you use the same mindset to go where you were going?
Yeah. I have a refuse to lose mentality, and little things like, don't listen to cliches of one door closes, another one open. No, mate, I'm the guy that will kick that door in. And if I can't go through the door and it don't open, I'm going to go around the back and climb through the window and stand there. And I think fear is not just in acting. Fear is in everything we do. And fear goes back to when you was a kid, and everyone, male or female, remembers the first time they got winded.
Mm.
And you get winded when as a little kid, and the fear of death, you can't breathe. That fear is the worst fear you'll ever get. It would never get as bad as that. Someone puts a gun to your head. That fear, that first fear, will always be the worst that you'll always remember. Am I right? And I've lived in fear all my life. And even with my sobriety, fear. But if you can learn to live in that fear, and I'm not being a, you know, philosophy, or I'm not trying to be smart, or this is something I've heard from someone. I'm talking about me. And my fear going into acting was, firstly, embarrassment. Secondly, rejection. Thirdly, I'm untrained. Am I going to get found out and become embarrassing to my family and me? You know, and it kind of went like that. And I thought, I'm going to give this a go. And I won't spin plates me. If I'm going to go into the restaurant business, I'm in the restaurant business. If I'm going to go into the food business, I'm in the food business. I'm not spinning plates, because I need to be the best at that before I move on. And if it fails and I'm not the best of it, I know when to go, you ain't good at this, mate. You're shit.
Yeah.
Move on. Do you understand? Because of my responsibility, and I've got mouths to feed. So it's kind of there. But with the acting, you've got to love it. And I loved it. And I've always wanted to be an actor. And I've always performed in front of my mum, dancing to Kung Fu Fighting, and
that was my first record I bought.
Do you know what I mean? So we're very similar. And I used to come out doing the Kung Fu Fighting, and my mum used to go, "Come and tell me, what's this?" So I've always been that kid that's joking and doing things, and you know, I'd walk out in my mum's shoes and put a bow in the air and just do things to get a laugh and to get, you know, and I believe that every workman and every soul is, if he's up a ladder, he'll quote De Niro's sayings and he sings. So we've all got that entertainment spark in us.
Yeah.
And we're all good storytellers, and we all aspire to be things. And again, it was a manifestation of mine. And before I know it, I was there, and it was like, listen, you're in. You better take this seriously, be disciplined and deal with this, because you can get there and them get embarrassed.
Yeah.
You got to remember that. The getting there without embarrassment is one thing, but you can quickly mess it up, which I have done.
Mm.
And it's the embarrassing comes after that. Do you see what I'm saying here?
How did you deal with that?
I just didn't. I didn't deal with it. I got to a point where, you know, me and Danny, we kind of dominated the British film industry for quite a while, and we was churning out some good stuff. But I went from that to superstardom and fame overnight, because I had 3 films out in the cinema at once that were epic movies. There was no video on demand, and everyone just went, where the fuck did he come from? Mm. He's epic. And then it was an overnight thing. And then I quickly got into the the rock and roll, the red carpets, you know, the LA, if you've been there, you're smiling, I can see on your face, you know, I'm all of a sudden I'm sitting with people that I would never dream of sitting with. And, you know, I saw it in magazines and look at all these stars. And while I was, you know, on my way to work to paint a council flat and all of a sudden I'm here. What the fuck? How did this happen? I'm sitting on a set with Morgan Freeman, Jet Li and Bob Hoskins. And I'm like, wow. And then it just went from there. So you never think it's going to end. And then the drugs and the booze kicks in and you think you're, and then it goes to there.
Mm.
And then you're very alone because nobody fucking wants you. And the journey back up is nigh impossible. And I can only count 4 or 5 people on my hands that's done it. And by the grace of God and this sobriety that I'm in now, it's give it back to me. So yeah, that's kind of where it's at.
So nice to hear, mate. We're just being wrapped up out of time.
I see your face.
And I know that journey because I blew my whole self up in 2004 to wiping my whole career out. And it took me 2 years debating whether to go back in the business, and I did. And I will put this on record for people. Sobriety gave me so much of all the discussions we're talking about, the ability to manifest, drive myself through all the fears that I gained, completely sober to go back even better a second time at an age where I shouldn't have been there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, coming off to doing what we're doing.
You are a fucking superhero of mine, mate. We spoke on the phone the other day, and when you told me, I thought it was like 4 or 5, and when you told me how long you've been sober, I was like, wow, like what you've done, where you've been through, and to still be here doing this, it's magical. And the gifts that I've been given at such an early stage in my sobriety is unsurpassed. I couldn't dream of it. And first and foremost, family, opportunities that I'm given. Now, sitting with you, and I needed to say that you asked me to come here 5 years ago, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you know the reason why I didn't? Because I was lying. I was sitting in the rooms lying. But by the grace of God and this program, I'm not lying anymore. And I can sit here with my head held high, even with my emotion. When I talk about it, I feel emotional because I'm so overwhelmed at the program. I know that I can't do this without a program. I know I can't do this without people like you calling me every day. I know I can't do it without the fellowship. And just for people out there that are white-knuckling it like I did and you did, don't do it. Don't waste time. Do the program. Do your service. Do your steps. And I'm telling you, I'm 66 days in today, right? And I've had nothing but magic. And I'm that guy now that just wants to do more. I want to do the steps. I want to do this. I don't want to do that. And long may it be that way. Because right now I'm not drinking. Right now I'm not using. And right now, today, I don't want to. Because the gifts that I've been given.
Tamer, God bless you, mate. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.
This Is Powerful is brought to you by Stride Foundation. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, please head over to www.stridefoundation.com where you can find links to resources that may help. You can also donate. Please make a donation. It will help us bring to you more episodes. Please rate, follow, and subscribe to the show. Why? This will help the algorithm make us more visible to others who need help. And share this podcast with your family, friends. Head over to social media at Paul Scolfort and at @this_is_powerful. You'll get to see what's coming up. And you can get in touch with us because I love hearing about you. Thank you also to my beautiful wife, Dr. Federica Amati, the best producer, Shannon Delwich, to Ebba Long, who does all the hard work in the background. Thank you also to Ria Musa and the rest of the team. Did you know also you can watch us on YouTube? Just search for This Is Powerful with me, Paul Scolfort. Hi, everybody. I'd really love to hear your views so that we can produce a podcast with the content that matters to you. It doesn't matter if you just joined us or if you've been listening from the start. We would love you to fill in the short listener feedback form, which you can find in the show notes. And let me know your thoughts on our podcast. It would really mean a lot. Thanks, guys.